This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day here on this fine station. 6 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center between the Winnipeg Jets and the Anaheim Ducks tonight. Jets defense is slowly but surely getting back to health. Grant Klitsam activated off of the injured reserve earlier this morning. So that's one of the sort of three Jets defensemen that were injured who's now back to health. Wanted to spend the next 10 or so minutes discussing what you think the Jets should do with their defensive core once everybody's healthy, once Enstrom's back in action, supposedly at the beginning of January, once Bogosian's back in action, maybe a couple weeks after that. Now that you've seen Dustin Byfuglien on the back end for a few games, now that Ben Chiarot has come up from the AHL and played a few games, what should the Jets do with their defense when they're healthy come the middle of January?
Well, I think the first thing, Drew, is these hypotheticals only work so much in that there's a couple weeks before those guys are back, and lots of stuff can happen between now and then. So if they were to come back, say, tomorrow, I think you have an interesting decision with Chiarot, obviously, but more so with Byfuglien. And, you know, Bogosian and Enstrom, do they slot back in as a pair? They're playing quite well before their respective injuries. And then does Byfuglien, I guess the question I have, does Dustin Byfuglien, have we seen enough of him first off in the back end under a new structured system? I don't know about that. But does Dustin Byfuglien succeed on defense playing far less minutes? Because that's what happens. I mean, he's a horse. He's been logging big minutes. But when Bogosian comes and Truba's there, there's only so many minutes to go around. So is he going to become a third pairing guy? And is that where he's best utilized? I think that at the end of the day, including waivers on the back end, I think Byfuglien goes back up to forward is what I think happens.
Yeah, absolutely, Richie. I'd be very surprised. I wouldn't be shocked, because Dustin Byfuglien's played really well with Ben Chiarot there in the back end here, three games now?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be shocked, because I think he's been good. And I didn't have any real concerns with him going back to D, because he's played D since the last year of the Thrashers. But I think, to me, there's an interesting dynamic developing with Ben Chiarot, because I think Ben Chiarot is a guy that we know had a very good season for the Ice Caps last year, played big minutes for the Ice Caps last year, and he's a guy that I think factors into the future of the defense here. And we know Josh Morrissey, there's a good chance he makes the team next year unless he plays a year in the AHL, but we know this is going to be his last year in the WHL, mm-hmm. That's for sure. But moving forward here, I think there's an interesting dynamic developing, because he's been very solid, and he's a guy that really, he doesn't have a high offensive upside, I don't think. But
Ben Chiarot, you're talking about.
Ben Chiarot. Yeah. But I think we've seen that, you know, he's a guy that he can get, especially when he's been given some opportunities, he's a guy that does have some offensive ability, but more so, he's been very responsible defensively. Plays a pretty simple game. Ben Chiarot's not a flashy guy, but he's a physical guy. He can dish out the hits, and he's shown here in his three games that he's been pretty solid. To me, you have to wonder, well, do they consider moving a Grant Klitsam or a Paul Postma? To me, that is a possibility. I'm not saying that they're going to do it, but you have to. You could make the strong argument that the way Ben Chiarot has played, he should stay up. And I think once you move Byfuglien, okay, that takes care of one spot, but then they're going to have to make a decision there. Do you keep Ben Chiarot, and do you kind of rotate him on that bottom pairing with Paul Postma, Adam Party? To me, that's what I would do. Again, I'm not the general manager or the coach. I think we know that.
Yes, we do.
But I think that you could make the strong argument. Ben Chiarot's impressed me, and he's a guy that he's not I think, you know, you watch his game, and he's not the best skater. He's not the fastest guy out there, but he's a very solid, prototypical stay-at-home defenseman that, you know, can jump into the rush and make some things happen offensively. So to me, he's the guy that I think I would keep in the lineup. But again, Grant Klitsam activated off of injured reserve. He's on a one-way contract. He has another year left in his contract. I think it's interesting to see what Chevy does there.
Well, for all intents and purposes, I mean, Ben Chiarot is also on a one-way contract in that he has to clear waivers to go back down to the AHL Ice Caps. Do you think if he would clear waivers if he was sent down?
I thought he was on a two-way deal.
He is on a two-way deal, but I think he's reached that threshold where he's played enough games or he's at such an age where he does have to clear waivers to go down. That's what I've seen this week in all the chatter is that he would have to clear waivers despite having a two-way deal.
Okay.
So, you know, if that's the case, you know, young defenseman has played solidly for the Jets for the past, you know, week, 10 days, and assume, let's say he goes through the next month playing solidly like that. Is that a guy who's going to clear waivers given the really the lack of quality young defensemen that are on the market in the NHL?
No, Drew, I don't think that's what would be the case. So the if that's when it gets into a situation of salary. And by that I mean if you put a guy like Klitsam or, you know, on waivers, does Klitsam with a salary that he has and probably a lack of value for your dollar, does he get claimed by a team? And if he does get claimed, do you really worry about it? Older, you know, less potential, a higher ticket. I think a guy like Klitsam, you look at the roster crunch on the back end, if they are all healthy at the same time, which is a big if, you know, you probably have to move Bufflin up front and put one of the guys through waivers. And you're going to put a guy who you see is providing you with less value.
And I think you got to factor in, Richie, he's a left-shot defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. And they're stronger on the right side.
That's absolutely right.
So I think this is an interesting dilemma. It's a good dilemma to have if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice. But I think he's played too well to send him down. And I'll be honest, when Ben Chiarot was called up, I expected him to get into some games here. He's played four games, but, I mean, he's really impressed me. And he's young. He's 23 years old. This is his first kind of extended look in the NHL. He only played one game last year. I believe it was against the Blackhawks. So I think it's not as easy as Bogo and Enstrom come back and, okay, send Chiarot back down. It's not that easy.
So what do you do then? You have Trouba, Stewart as your one pair, and then you have Enstrom and Bogosian as your two pair. And then your third pair is Postma and Party right now. You have Chiarot as your seven, and then Klitsam would have to clear waivers.
And, you know, if they lost Grant Klitsam, given his injury struggles...
I don't think it would be much of a concern.
I don't think it's much of a concern either. To be honest, from my perspective, I would keep Bufflin right now back on defense.
So then what are you going to do with your roster crunch, though?
It's a tough question.
Well, that's the thing. You don't have... I mean, first off, are you going to get value out of him if he's playing... The problem is if you disperse your minutes in such a way that they're all playing equal, then you're not using your team to the best.
I don't think
Horses got to play.
I think ideally, based on Dustin Bufflin's style of game, you'd probably want him, and the way the pairings shake out, Richie, you'd want him as your third pairing defenseman if you want to keep him there. I don't think they want to keep him there, though.
No.
I think the reason why they moved him back is because they were forced to.
I know I agree with you there, but I mean, I know.
And he's played well.
He's just so impactful on the back end, and he certainly had an impact as a forward. But it was
also
not as significant on a night-in, night-out basis as it was when he's a defenseman.
You'd put Party through waivers before you put Chiarot just because of the youth. You put Klitsam through because of the salary. He's not getting claimed at 2.06 for this year and next year. I think I would feel safe in saying that if Grant Klitsam goes on waivers, he will clear. And then you're paying an NHL salary to a guy in the AHL. Well, that's the management's problem.
It's $2 million. It's not they're going to rip their hair out. And obviously, at the time, it was a calculated gamble to sign Grant Klitsam to that contract. And he's been injury prone, and he's regressed since he came over.
Yeah, it's a bad contract. But
it's a bad contract.
There's been some good ones, too.
Right. But it was still a good waiver claim, I think, back in the day.
It didn't do anything. No. There's not. Why was it a good waiver claim?
I think given some of the alternatives that they were using at that point, they got more out of them than you would a typical waiver claim, I do think. Maybe marginally.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he hasn't been an impactful defenseman, and that a lot of that is due to injuries and just the talent level that he has.
Yeah, I mean, you got him. He played all right down the stretch. So, sure, I guess you got more out of him than a regular waiver claim. And then I think the contract negates the value you got out of him, frankly. But you take some chances. But
you talk about playing your horses. You got to play your horses.
Got to play your horses.
Dustin Bufflin is a horse, whether he's on defense or he's on forward. He's not going to get a huge number of minutes as a third-line winger compared to a third-line defenseman. But
by roster necessity, too, right? Like, if you're... You're saying, okay, he's not going to get a lot of minutes, but if he's going to play on the back end and not get a ton of minutes, is that going to be an effective use considering the hole that you have up front? I mean, you see the lines that they're throwing out there? I mean, they're winning and they're getting points, but you see the third line the other night? Come on. I mean, they're not going to be able to sustain that.
I think, you know, Drew, you make a good point. I mean, there's a few reasons why Dustin Bufflin could remain a defenseman. A, he likes it. And I don't think they make decisions based on what players like, but he's comfortable there. Regardless, he's comfortable there. He's been playing well, and he can play more minutes. I agree with all of those points, I think, but the point Richie made, because of the crunch and the fact that they're going to be getting Bogosian back, Enstrom back, and now Klitsam is back, and you have to assume Sherratt, there's a good chance he stays up. I think Byfuglien makes them a much more dangerous team, though, in their top nine if he's playing forward, though.
And look at Postma, too, the way they handled Postma. I mean, Postma didn't get sent down because of the one-way deal, because of the fact that he'd have to have cleared waivers. So if that's a precedent, you probably aren't going to see them send down Sherratt because they didn't want to lose him on, they didn't want to lose Postma on waivers.
Oh, I think you can't afford to lose a young defenseman for, you know, for nothing, especially given, I mean, the other guys who are options to go get sent down. You know, if you lose Adam Partey, you know, fine. If you lose Grant Klitsam, fine. If you lose Julien Brouillet, fine. Right. I mean, you can't afford to lose a guy like Ben Sherratt.
I don't even know a ton about the guy.
No, you can't afford to lose young defensemen for nothing.
Right.
Who seem as though they're capable of playing a consistent NHL defensive shift. Whether it's 16 minutes or it's 20 minutes or it's 12 minutes a night, you just can't afford to lose that guy.
And we can always only base our opinion on what we've seen. And it's only been four games this year in the NHL. But from what we've heard and a little bit of what we've seen from when we can of the Ice Caps, he's been excellent. And I think back to what we were saying before, because of the potential in his age and how he's shown at 23 years old, the guy's got a lot of poise. I mean, he doesn't look shaky out there very often, and he brings that physical component to the game, which you want a guy to be able to bring, especially when he's a defensive defenseman. I think it's a tough decision. I think he's shown enough to me, even though it's only four games. I mean, you want to see what he's done over another 15 or 20 games, really, before you can say that he's going to be an everyday NHLer next year. But I like his game.
And there's a need on the left side. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, the need on the left side is also certainly a factor.
If you want to look future-wise, then you'd say, okay, we have Enstrom, we know that. And Mark Stewart's playing alongside Trouba. And then you look at whether that continues or not. And then you look at the third pairing, and you're saying to yourself, okay, do we need to bring back Adam Partey? Or is a guy like Sherratt able to play that third side? And then can we maybe give Morrissey a year pro in the AHL, which I think is probably ideal, to see how he fares there before we bring him up and unless he really forces our hand. That's probably what you're thinking. And the Jets' strength on the team is in the back end.
Even though Morrissey's been excellent, I mean, he is, and he was traded recently.
I mean, you better be dominant as a 20-year-old defenseman or, you know, last year eligibility in the WHL.
That goes back to what we've talked about over the years so many times, is that you'd ideally like them to make a rule so that a 19-year-old, 20-year-old could play in the AHL.
Absolutely.
Because he's already played in the AHL.
Sure.
Played for the Ice Caps in the playoffs, and he was really good. So I think Richie's right. There's no rush to get Morrissey into the NHL, but it depends on so many things. How does he play in training camp?
You want the depth option, right?
Yeah, you want the depth option. It's something the Jets
Exactly as you said, you want to basically say, okay, you know, just play so brilliantly well that we have to force our hand.
You want a guy to force.
You want to make a decision. That's just roster depth.
Just a quick note here on Byfuglien on his games on defense. He played 29 minutes.
That's what
and
I
sure
mean.
That was with the overtime. Sure.
Yeah, but still.
But 29 minutes, very impressive for Byf, because he's not a guy that, as we've said in previous years, when he played big time minutes on defense a couple years ago, it was too much for him. But
well, he's also playing a responsible 29 minutes, I find.
Yeah, and for the most part, but you're going to be playing, you know, the schedule's going to get heavier down the stretch. When those guys are back, the schedule's going to get a little heavier, and you're going to want to be able to attack the other team with three lines, not two.
Something for the Jets brass to consider over the next month, give or take a few days. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll go around the NHL with some NHL news and notes.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 2 o'clock, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. NHL.com. New Year's Eve, some tickets still available tonight. They're completely sold out. And just announced earlier this week, coming up in March of 2015, Harland Williams, you know him from Half-Baked, you know him from Dumb and Dumber, you know him from This Something About Mary. There's Something About Mary. He'll be at Rumors, so go check out Harland Williams. Tickets on sale right now at RumorsComedyClub.com.
NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes for this Saturday afternoon. We're going to go around the NHL looking at some topical conversation. We start in Toronto, where Leafs assistant general manager Kyle Dubas spoke to the media in the midst of the Leafs 7-1-1 winning streak.
You know, from Brennan and Dave to Randy and his staff, there's nobody content that we've gone 7-1-1 in this stretch, and there's no one really content with it. It's trying to continue to hone in on our process and really maximize our potential as a team.
Nope. Wow! I love that. Like this, we're in this day and age of headlines, right? So Kyle Dubas says absolutely nothing there, and then it's in every website is have a headline on all the papers that Dubas and Leafs aren't satisfied. Oh, okay. You know, I thought he's going to come out and do an interview and say, "We feel great. We're 7-1-1. We're a great team. We feel like we can beat anybody." Whoever says those things, and because of his background, and people are blowing out of proportion of the comments. It's crazy. I mean, can we get some actual journalism here?
Well, we're talking about it. What does that mean for us?
I just can't believe this is news. A guy comes out. That's what I'm saying. This guy comes out and says his team isn't satisfied. Let's interview every team in the league that's won 5 games in a row and ask if the team's satisfied. And what's the GM going to say?
Probably that they're not satisfied,
right.
That they want more.
That's right.
There's no team that's satisfied until, you know, June 22nd, and they're hoisting the Stanley Cup.
It's as much ado about nothing. It's Kyle Dubas, and suddenly we have to talk about it.
I'm not quite sure why he wouldn't be satisfied the way they've played and the reaction to those two horrible losses that really had everybody calling for someone to be fired, whether it was Randy Carlyle or somebody. You know, the Leafs, to me, the most impressive thing about the Leafs is not only are they getting good goaltending from both of their goaltenders, they're getting secondary scoring, not just from Phil Kessel and James Van Riemsdyk, if I can say that properly.
You did.
They're getting scoring from, I have them in my hockey pool. But they're getting scoring from Nazem Kadri, and Peter Holland's done a nice job there. And, you know, the Leafs to me, and again, this goes to the uncertainty with who's going to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, because it's very weak this year.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't,
they're in a position where they can make the playoffs. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised. I didn't pick the Leafs to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I wouldn't be surprised if they get that 7th or 8th spot.
I mean, if you don't make the playoffs in the East, you're a really bad team.
If you make the playoffs in the East, you're probably still a pretty bad team.
Yeah, that's very true as well.
Did you watch that game, the Leafs? I don't know if you guys caught that Leafs-Wings game the other night. It was a pretty funny game because the Leafs touched the puck 4 times and won.
Well, that's when the Randy Carlyle was able to use the line against James Reimer that he was only okay when Reimer, I think, had something like 45 saves.
He was incredible.
Yeah, he was incredible in that game. Moving to Detroit, and we'll actually talk about this with
Mike. Talk about Kenny Holland. He thinks his team isn't content with the way they're performing so far.
Despite their 7-1-1 stretch or something. We'll talk about this with Mike Harrington coming up in about 5 minutes from the Buffalo News. Ken Campbell of the Hockey News reporting that for Detroit to acquire Tyler Myers, the big Sabres defenseman who's been linked to Detroit for going on 2 or 3 years at this point in time, the asking price is prospect Dylan Larkin, a roster player similar to either Riley Sheehan or Thomas Yurko, and a first-round pick. Is that too much for Detroit to give up to get Tyler Myers?
Who's coming up with that stuff?
That's Ken Campbell reporting that.
It's an interesting...
Well, he's reporting it. He didn't come up with the trade, but he's reporting
that. Well, that's what they're asking, really.
That's what their asking price is.
And Tim Murray, way too much.
Well, Tim Murray's got high asking price for everybody. We'll talk to Mike Harrington about
that. But, Richie, I mean, come on. Thomas Yurko, I mean, he's an up-and-coming star for that team.
Is he a star? Up-and-coming star?
Well, he's a good player.
Like, Riley Sheehan is going to be a real solid third-line center, I think, and that's, you know, Buffalo wants to add some grit. Dylan Larkin, I haven't seen play. He's a U.S. national development guy.
He was just drafted.
Yeah, U.S. national development guy. And the first-round pick, I mean, is it going to be high or low in a deep draft?
Were they training for Bobby Orrier?
Well, fair enough, Bezzy, but can Tyler Myers, in their mind, does Detroit see Tyler Myers as a right-side top pairing defenseman? Because if they do, and he's at 5.5 a year for the next little while here.
That's a bad contract.
Well, it is where he is right now. But do they see a potential? Now, I don't know if that's what it's going to be. I think maybe it'll be like a guy like a Yurko Sheehan, maybe a Larkin in a second or third. Maybe that's what it ends up falling to. But I see Myers doesn't skate like most Detroit. You know, Detroit's not maybe as fast as people think still, but he's not the best skater.
They're pretty fast, Richie.
No, they are fast, but not all their guys. Some of their guys are a little slower than people think. But at the end of the day, they move the puck so well. Would he flourish in a system like that? And would he become a way better defenseman? Maybe you get value for your dollar there, and you get your, you know, we went through the league defenseman there. Myers has potential. I think that possibly could still happen based on Detroit having a lot of young players. And Yurko, you know, you have Nyquist, you have Thomas Tatar, and does Yurko, is he going to move and be as dominant, to move around on the ice and be as dominant as maybe some of the other guys that they have? Again, I don't know a lot about Larkin, and maybe the draft pick gets pushed down, but I see that being approximately what you're going to have to pay for Tyler Myers. And if not, like considering his age and his contract situation and Buffalo's up-and-coming status when they have all these young guys coming through the system, hopefully for them, unlike the Oilers, you have no reason to rush a Myers trade. Unless you get your asking price, why would you deal him?
I also don't think the Red Wings are tied for first in the East right now. I don't know if they're in a rush. And Richie, we've been hearing about this for, it seems like 3 years now, that the Red Wings really want Mike Green. Seems to be they're doing pretty well with the group of defensemen they have. How much do they want to disrupt that depth to get a Mike Green or Tyler Myers? Guys, you talk about top 20 defensemen. Those guys are not top 20 defensemen.
They're not. I mean, Green is a one-year kind of guy who moves the puck for you and can't really defend well enough. Myers is potentially better.
Yep.
Well, if they get the Tyler Myers that when he first broke into the league, when he was this, you know, when he was a Dado Chara like, in that he's got the height and he's got the size and he's got the long stick, and
Chara's not a great skater either. That's why you see like the now left the right side guy, but you see the, you know, the analogous points there.
Yeah.
Between those two guys, and Chara was a late bloomer too, guys. It took him a while to find himself. Myers came onto the scene and then probably because of his early success, created standard for himself that maybe he couldn't keep up early on. But it doesn't mean later on. Defensemen take longer too, right?
Especially when he goes to a good team like the Detroit Red Wings. He might be able to flourish in that system, and all of a sudden Detroit's willing to give up that package because they say, well, look how good this guy is. And you know, we're trading from a position of depth to a position of strength and getting a guy when he's not quite buy low. But
you're buying low. That's for sure buying low.
Buying low for that?
You're buying low on Myers right now, but I don't think Tim Murray values him as low as maybe you would think.
I think if Tyler Myers gets traded, he's not getting that much in return.
I think you're getting at least a young, up-and-coming player who can play for sure in your top nine, a top prospect, and a draft pick.
Not a first-rounder, though.
I don't think you're getting a first-rounder, though, especially in this year's draft.
Last point for now, Sidney Crosby being held out of the two recent games for precautionary reasons. Certainly looks like mumps.
It's mumps. I mean, it's for sure mumps.
Well, I was saying this to Richie before, you know.
I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't saying that, but that's funny. I was saying that, you know, in the NHL, you're so, you know, a guy's arm could be falling off and it's a lower body injury. You know, did you see Sidney Crosby's face yesterday?
Oh, Richie, Drew, it's inflamed. There's swelling. I mean, it's mumps or it's something. It's probably mumps. But to me, I'm glad you brought this up because there was a good article, maybe we can tweet it out. I was telling you guys about this in McLean's, about the spread of mumps and how it's really a perfect breeding ground for the spread of mumps.
Like an NHL locker room is?
Right. And the thing is, if you trace it, certain teams were playing, originally it was the Anaheim Ducks with Corey Perry and Francois Beauchemin that got it. But it's a scary thing. I mean, I don't think, you know, this is going to last that long. But
yeah, it's lasted long, pretty long already.
Right, and apparently the symptoms don't show up.
The Simpsons?
They don't show up either.
Symptoms don't show. I've had a little too much coffee here at Boston Pizza, but you know, it is something scary. And I mean, when the best player in the world is out because of it, I don't think he's going to be out for, you know, 3 weeks here. But I mean, it's kind of scary stuff. I guess vaccine. Some of these guys might have to get the vaccine. Apparently, the Jets are offering vaccines for their players.
As they should.
You take it?
When I was younger, I did.
Well, I think everybody gets it when they're younger, but I think it expires and nobody's quite used to getting it again.
What, are you both doctors here?
And only in our spare time. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. On my left, Richard Pollock. On my right, Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington. Mike, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Drew, thanks for having me, as always. No problem.
Now, have you started your quest to Winnipeg yet? Is it, you know, is there dog sleds involved, snowmobiles?
Hey, I'm feeling confident. I've had the forecast on my iPhone for a week, making sure the temperature's okay. I'm feeling good. It starts Monday, and I'm feeling like we'll have no repeat of last year's calamity.
Well, fingers crossed that you don't have to drive back to Minnesota after like you had to do last year. But getting to Winnipeg via Vancouver, which was always an interesting path to get here.
Keep in mind, I'll be making sure to tweet it all out again.
Well, there you go.
You can follow it.
Okay. Well, you can follow him. Yeah, you can follow Mike on Twitter. It's certainly a very good follow. Mike brought you on to talk about the Sabres. Of course, they're going to be making their only visit to Winnipeg on Tuesday night. Now, we all knew it was going to be a down year for the Sabres, and it certainly started off that way, but they've been playing better as of late. You know, why the turnaround? Just sort of a natural progression that they weren't going to be as bad as we'd seen for the first, you know, month, 6 weeks of the season?
Well, part of it is that, and GM Tim Murray did say maybe we'll find out that was our worst hockey of the year when they started 2-9-1. But realistically, I mean, Jonas Enroth has just been terrific in goal. He's got a save percentage and even strength for the season at .936. He's just playing great. They're getting outshot by terrible margins. It was 45-19 for Calgary the other night, and Enroth made 42 saves. And that's really what's going on here. They've got a much better defense going now with the two kids, Rasmus Ristolainen and Nikita Zadorov, in the back line now, and that's also helping them. They're scoring a few more goals, but ultimately it's the goaltending that's trumping the opponents and trumping the analytics, which show the Sabres certainly at the bottom of the league, but the record isn't reflecting that.
Mike, before we get to previewing the Jets-Sabres game that's coming up next week, I wanted to ask you about what I think is a great story with Zemgin Girgensson, a player who I really like in his second year in the NHL right now. He's leading all-star balloting, voting, and apparently a lot of that is coming from Latvia. How great of a story is this?
Well, he's kind of sheepish about it, to be honest with you. I mean, Latvia is a country of about 2 million people, and the league is estimating 80% of his votes are coming from Latvia, which would be about 660,000. In a country of 2 million, that's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah.
He's having a nice year. He's looking like he could be a 2025 goal guy this year. He's really the number one center on the team right now. You know, but to have double the votes of Sidney Crosby and Patrick Kane and the like is kind of ridiculous, and everybody realizes that, but that's the process. The fans get to vote, whether you're in Buffalo or Winnipeg or in Riga, Latvia. And, you know, don't forget, guys, Latvia hockey players are heroes there, especially guys who make the NHL. And Girgensson's played on their Olympic team under Ted Nolan that almost beat Team Canada in Sochi. So he is big news in Latvia, and he's getting a tremendous amount of support from back home.
Yeah, Mike, Drew has an Artur Zerbe jersey.
And Artur Zerbe, of course, don't forget, he is now the Sabres goaltending coach.
And he dressed for a game this year, right?
He had to dress for a game as a disaster goalie, absolutely.
Mike, you look at the Sabres roster, and they have a few pending UFAs that you assume they're going to peddle to try and continue to build on their draft picks and prospects in the system as part of this rebuild. Chris Stewart's a name we hear a lot about, and sometimes we probably hear more about him than we should in terms of what he's really produced. What do you see? I mean, it appears Tim Murray's going to deal him. What do you see Tim Murray getting in return for a guy like Chris Stewart?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, are people going to deal for Chris Stewart based on his career? Well, he's had two 28-goal seasons. He's had a couple terrific highlight reel goals this year, but he's got three goals and is minus 11 in 28 games. Are they going to deal for what he's done this year? It's hard to say. I mean, Ted Nolan just scratched Chris Stewart. There was a little kerfuffle here in Buffalo, and Nolan used the word soft to describe his play, and Stewart retorted back, "Why don't you ask Brandon Prust or Milan Lucic how soft they am?" He had fought them earlier in the year. Right now, Stewart is not doing a whole lot, and I really think the Sabres are only looking at a middle-round pick for him. And you hear a lot about Ottawa wanting him and Boston wanting him. And, you know, Boston wants that tough guy they see who fought Lucic, but, you know, he's not going to be a Boston Bruin kind of forward if they make a deal like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what they get for him. I really think they're going to try to hang on to him a little more, see if he can elevate his game a little and kind of, you know, puff up his value before they make a move.
Yeah, you know, Drew Stafford's another name, Mike, and you look at Drew Stafford, and to me the talent levels can't be really questioned. Just he has not been able to put it together. He had some success earlier in his career, but certainly that contract, I thought the Sabres would have assumed Darcy Regier, when signing, would have probably got a lot more value than they have. What do you see as Drew Stafford's value, and is it just a foregone conclusion that he will be traded in the couple in the coming months?
Yeah, he's certainly going to go too. He's got 15 points this year, a former 30-goal scorer. He's been really good in the dressing room, though, with these young guys. I'm another mid-round pick kind of guy, but I think a lot of teams look at Stafford and Stewart kind of similar. You get them out of Buffalo, maybe you get them with a center who gets them the puck a little more. We can fix them. We can get more out of them. So that kind of artificially inflates the value of those two guys. But certainly those are the two biggest trade guys the Sabres have. I think they'll deal one of the goalies as well. The goalies are both UFAs. I got to believe you're not trading Jonas Enroth the way he's playing. But Stafford and Stewart are your two roster guys who certainly are going to go at some point here, whether it's next week or not until March 2nd.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Mike covers the Sabres for that fine newspaper. Mike, wanted to ask you about Cody Hodgson, healthy scratch for the Sabres as of late. He's got 3 points in 28 games.
He's been awful.
Which certainly isn't very good. And he's also making $4.25 million this year and for the next 4 years. You know, how does this situation with the Sabres and Hodgson resolve itself?
Well, I don't know. It's the last gift that Darcy Regier gave the Sabres to keep on giving. You know, I mean, Cody Hodgson certainly should have gotten a bridge contract, gotten a two-year deal, and play yourself into a big free agent contract, or you stay with Buffalo. To give him a six-year deal at that time was complete folly, a complete mistake by Darcy Regier. You know, they can't buy him out. The compliance buyouts are over. The regular buyout would take him through 2023. So I don't know what they're going to do with this guy. He's got one goal, two assists, and he's minus 11 in 28 games. And he's supposed to be perhaps your top scoring center. And he did have 20 goals for them last year. You know, he's become this year's version of Ville Leino, guys. He just skates around the ice, and literally nothing happens when he's out there. He hardly touches the puck. He skates around for 45 seconds and goes back to the bench. It's absolutely bizarre. Ted Nolan doesn't know what to do with the guy. You know, they have a Hall of Famer in Brian Trotcher, one of the assistant coaches, working with him constantly. I don't know what anybody knows what to do with the guy. He just simply is in this rut, and he can't get out of it. He doesn't do anything, and he works hard. He stays at the practice, but then the games happen, and he does literally nothing.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about Nikita Zadorov, who was drafted in the first round in 2013. He's a guy that's been in and out of the Sabres lineup this year, but there's some speculation that the Sabres might lend him to Team Russia for the World Junior Tournament that's coming up in a couple weeks. I guess, is there anything new on that front? Do you think that would be the right decision?
Well, you almost put that one on a tee for me, as if we talked before the show here. And if you go to BuffaloNews.com, you can see my exclusive chat with him today. After the morning skates, Zadorov told me he does not expect to go to the World Juniors. Why would I leave when I'm playing in the best league in the world? I love my home country, but I'm playing big minutes here. Ted Nolan announced today that Mike Weber had a minor knee procedure yesterday. He's going to be out until after Christmas. So they're down right now. You know, the six healthy defensemen, Tyson Strachan, might play Monday against Ottawa, maybe Tuesday in Winnipeg. So Nolan said the same thing. You know, those World Junior guys are guys who don't necessarily play a lot. They're in and out of the lineup. You don't really see too many guys go to the World Juniors playing 20 minutes a night, and that's what Zadorov's doing. Now, he didn't play the first month when he's getting back in shape, and here's a stat for you guys. The Sabres are 2-8-1 when Zadorov doesn't play. When Zadorov does play, they're 9-8-1, and there's certainly some connection there.
Talk about Zadorov, and you talk about Ristolainen, who had obviously had the winning goal last year at the World Juniors. Mike, Tyler Myers, though, we spoke about him before you hopped on, and the report from Ken Campbell, the Hockey News, that something along the lines of Thomas Yurko and Riley Sheahan, a first-round pick, and Dylan Larkin would be something, would be what it would take from Detroit along those parameters to get him out of Buffalo. We also spoke about the fact that, really, I mean, Tim Murray is not under the gun to trade Tyler Myers. He's under contract long-term, and he's a young, you know, the young defenseman with upside. How do you see, like, do you see that Myers is a guy that Murray wants to move, or he'll be prompted to move only if the deal is something he can't refuse?
There's just all these reports out there with Myers, and that's the latest one. I read it, and it's ridiculous. They're not going to trade Tyler Myers. At some point, I wrote this in my column the other day in the Buffalo News, at some point you have to keep your NHL players and build your team. Now, you're going to trade Tyler Myers, who's playing very well, who's playing 24, 25 minutes a night, who's a right-shot defenseman at 24 years old. When you think you're going to be good in 2 or 3 years, he's going to be 26 or 27, and you're going to have traded that guy? And the reason why there's all these rumors out there is because everybody wants a right shot defenseman. Here's what we might want, Tyler Myers. Well, they're not shopping Tyler Myers. And ultimately, if they trade Tyler Myers, they're going to be looking for a big right shot defenseman in a couple years. That's why Myers is out there, because everybody wants what Buffalo has. I mean, the Sabres would be out of their minds to trade Myers, and all these rumors about Myers to me are a bunch of bunk.
You know, Mike, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. The Sabres have won two games in a row here, seven of their last ten. Are the fans in Buffalo getting a little bit nervous that they're playing themselves out of the McDavid-Eichel sweepstakes?
Oh, you had to bring that up. I have written it since October. I am very anti-tank. You play to win the game. You don't play to lose. These are professional athletes. People are paying real money for tickets. You play to win, you play the 82 games, and the draft is in June, and you draft where you draft, and you land where you land. And there's certainly a large segment of fans in this town who are pushing the Sabres to lose games, which I just think is absurd and ridiculous, and I don't care what 18-year-old is there. And we all know both of those guys should be star players. Yes, right now, some people are getting nervous, but some people are seeing Gergensen and Ristolainen and Zadorov really developing, and Enroth turning into a number one goalie before our eyes. And you know what, guys? Let's be honest here. Carolina and Edmonton are clearly awful. The Sabres are clearly better than both of those teams. So I don't think the Sabres are going to land one of those two guys, but they don't lose their pick. They still get the pick in this draft, and there's plenty of other good players to get.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. During the free agency period, the Sabres were active. They signed Matt Molson to that contract. They signed Brian Gionta. They traded for Josh Georges. Have those three veteran players, done anything to the Sabres locker room? Have they come in and changed the culture at all? And have they given sort of the younger players a good guideline for how to be the best possible NHL players?
Well, yeah, I think that really has helped. Josh Georges, the Sabres lead the league in block shots, guys, and it's contagious because Josh Georges has led the league most of the year. He missed a few games with a knee injury, so I think he's second right now. He certainly helped. Gionta got off to a terrible start. It was hard for him to really lead. Well, now he's got 9 points, he's got 3 goals, he's playing better, he can start leading now. You can see his impact around the locker room. And I just talked to Gionta yesterday about this. Those two guys were 2 games away from the Stanley Cup Finals last year, in June, a few months ago. They didn't come to Buffalo to finish 30th to draft some 18-year-old. And these are NHL veterans. Molson had been here already, he liked it here. He started to score some more. They have a good top line at Molson, Edison, Gergensen, and they have some veteran players here. And those three guys are really core guys. And yeah, they're having impact. I think Georges is having a big impact on this defense playing with Tyler Myers, and that's what Tim Murray wanted. Tim Murray replaced guys who were no longer in the NHL with guys like Gionta, Georges, and Molson, and it is having an impact. And if they don't finish 30th, and some fans don't like that, too bad. If you finish with 73 points this year, if you had 52 last year, and you improve by 21 points, how can anyone say that's a failure of the season?
Mike Harrington covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Follow him on Twitter at BN Harrington. Mike, appreciate the time. Good luck getting to Winnipeg on time for Tuesday night's game.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
We'll see you Tuesday, Mike. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can also find this week's Saturday Spotlight interview with John Paddock at those same three places. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon before we turn it over to Hustler and Lawless. You know it, you love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
We start this Saturday afternoon with Ryan Garbutt in the Dallas Stars. He was, of course, suspended for 3 games for his slew foot on Dustin Byfuglien earlier this week. Stars general manager Jim Neal spoke to the Dallas Morning News about that slew foot and about Ryan Garbutt's play. Here's what he had to say. He's got to stop. He knows he has to change his game. The message to Ryan is he's too valuable. I know he plays hard. He plays on the edge, but some of the things he doesn't need to do them. It's got to end. He's too valuable to the team. We need him on the ice. Two questions for you. One, are you fine with the length of the suspension? And two, your thoughts on Jim Neal's comments about Ryan Garbutt?
I think the suspension's fair. You can't go around doing that. It's a dangerous play. And And so I like that the NHL is addressing that. In terms of Jim Nill's comments, he's honest and he's accurate. And it's refreshing to hear a GM speak to the media and speak honestly and appropriately.
Yeah, even though Garbutt's a guy that can drop the gloves and play a physical game, that's part of his game. He's taking too many penalties.
Mm-hmm.
He's simply put, taking too many penalties. And this is a key part of the Dallas Stars team. We can sit here and argue if they have a shot at the playoffs right now. I would argue that they're almost playing themselves out of a playoff spot already. And last year, that line with Cody Eakin, both Winnipeg boys, were a huge part of the team that kind of stabilized the top nine there, and they haven't been as dominant this year. They haven't been as effective, and that's partly due to the fact that Garbutt's been in the penalty box too much. So again, I think Lindy Ruff and Jim Nill are just trying to get the best out of a player that they signed to a contract, and he's an important part of the team.
In the game earlier this week between the Bruins and the Blackhawks, Jonathan Toews was hit by Dennis Seidenberg, the Bruins defenseman. Toews stayed in the game briefly. He left the game after. Certainly looked like a concussion. He was groggy. After the game, Claude Julien speaking about Jonathan Toews and the hit. I've been saying that for a long time. We need to educate our players to protect themselves better, Claude Julien told WEEI.com. We keep turning our backs. We keep trying to curl away. A player's job is to finish his check, and a player should know he's going to be hit. It's not about tonight, it's about the whole league. I'm not one of those guys who has put a lot of pressure on people who look at those kind of things and say, it's okay to take away those hits from behind when they're warranted, but what about the other guy? Does he not have a responsibility to avoid putting himself into the position to get hit like that?
Yeah, he absolutely has a responsibility, and that's why especially young kids that are playing, they need to be educated on how to take a hit in addition to giving a hit. That's a situation. There was no suspension on the play, and Toews is going to be all right. There's not a long-term injury there. But, you know, I thought that was a difficult one for the NHL Department of Player Safety because it wasn't as maybe obvious as other hits, especially, you know, you talk about Evander Kane on Clayton Stoner, where you see his numbers, it's clearly a situation where it's a hit from behind and is suspension worthy, or Ryan Garbutt slew foot, it was right in front of the refs, everyone saw it. So I think Claude Julien makes some good points. I think we're seeing a lot of the time that a player, and we've seen this again and again and again, and Don Cherry would always talk about this on Coach's Corner, when a player turns at the last second.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position. And that's not just up against the boards behind the net. That can be on the sideboards as well. So I agree with what he's saying, Julien. You have to be able to always know where you are on the ice. And that's what Wayne Gretzky was so good at. He was. Mm-hmm. Everyone talks about, oh, no one would ever touch Wayne Gretzky. Al Strachan talks about that in his book. There was a rule that you couldn't touch Wayne Gretzky. No, he was just good at avoiding getting hit.
Moving on to Detroit, where Steven Weiss was injured again in the game last night against the Florida Panthers. He's expected to be out of the lineup. Who's the most injury-prone player in the NHL?
It's a good question, Drew. The Weiss thing's unfortunate because he came back and he was dynamic. How good he was. Was he just putting up points and people... And Ken Daniels on our show was wondering, you know, if he'd come back, and it was a concern. Troy West is here, and the possibility of Zach Bogosian being on that list is one thing. I mean,
I was trying to figure out who 8 is, and he's putting up...
No,
he's putting
8, up that's 4-4, four, four,
44,
Drew.
I got it now.
But yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of guys in the league who just can't seem to, who seem a little bit snake bit, and a lot of it, I think, is the fact that they're just, these guys are unlucky, but I think some of it's the fact that some guys are just in great shape and are just able to withstand a lot more pain.
Yeah, there's Martin Havlat, a guy that's had tons of injury problems. Rafi Torres has had a lot of injury problems. You know, you talk about Ryan Murray on the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yeah. He's young, he's had a lot of injury problems, so... Part of being making a career in the NHL is about how you take care of yourself. Let's be honest here. I'm not saying that any of these players haven't taken care of themselves, but some of it is bad luck.
One last rapid-fire question before we move to cheers and jeers. The NHL
better be better than that last question.
Sorry, in the NHL, which one? The Steven Weiss question?
Who's the most injury-prone player?
You said it was a good question literally 2 minutes ago.
I never did. Well, yeah, a good question for me to ponder about why you asked it.
Fair enough. Sounds like Denver and Minnesota and or Colorado and Minnesota and the Boston Bruins.
What, is this the money-making session of the National Hockey League? We need to watch another game outdoors that the snow is on the ice and they can't move the puck and they're shoveling and the game quality is terrible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Who's the ideal opponents for the Bruins, the Wild, and the Avalanche?
Let's talk about the Jets here. The Winnipeg's getting an outdoor game.
Yes.
I like the Wild there. I think, you know, cross border.
I don't think it really matters because people just go there to not watch the game, thankfully, because the game is terrible. So I don't really think it matters who they're playing. In Boston, in Boston, you probably want to play, you know, one of the old school rivals, Toronto or Montreal. I think Montreal will be in Boston. I think Detroit should be playing Colorado.
There you have it. Let's go to Cheers and Jeers and wrap up the show.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And Jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Paul, quickly.
My cheer of the week goes to Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail, who in his column for Saturday said, quote, "So many current GMs are so insecure that if they cannot win a deal outright, they'd rather do nothing than look stupid or risk the perception they've been fleeced." And that's, I think, 100% accurate, and it takes guts to say, and I think he's the best hockey writer in the industry, period, and I give him a cheer for that.
Aside from Gary Lawless.
Ezra Ginsberg.
You guys are going to give me a hard time here. Scott Gomez, he's had a really rough couple of years here, and he was playing with the Devils, not under contract, practicing with the team. He had 2 assists the other night versus the Carolina Hurricanes. Good for him, because, you know, you talk about he shouldn't be in the NHL, he's too slow. Fine, whatever. He stuck around. He's still in the NHL. Yep. So I'm going to cheer Scotty Gomez.
I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by jeering Jonathan Bernier of the Toronto Maple Leafs for not knowing who Nelson Mandela was.
Well, like, obviously you're going to jeer him for that. What about the Hartford Whalers that Hassler Instagram? Yeah.
Mandela was a great athlete.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to John Paddock of the Regina Paths for joining us in Saturday Spotlight, and Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for Jesse opping us here at Boston Pizza, and Remus back at the studio, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned. Hustler and Lawless are next on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.